This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you're listening to Bicycle Talk. It is February 21st, 2018. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, Fran Storch.
How?
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can call or text us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also visit me on Bicycle Talk on Facebook. If you want to listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk, you can listen on whus.org or on iTunes. And if you'd like to contribute to the show or be on as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Moving on to Ron's Rant of the Week. So I have a guest in the studio this morning, which I will introduce shortly. And I just said, hey, what you got for rants? And he goes, maybe you should talk about the bucket list. Okay, the bucket list. Do you have one? Should you have one? What's on the top of your list? Something for you to think about. I posted it on Facebook. If anybody's got any comments, they can put those comments there, and we'd love to hear from you on that. Now, the bucket list is an interesting thing because somehow I think the bucket list thing kind of came around with me probably after I turned 50. Because all of a sudden, you're, okay, I'm 50 now, let's see, we got to see if we can get some things done. And I have friends of mine that have bucket lists, and then I have friends that just don't, they don't really care about it, and that's what it is. So anyway, the question is, you know, do you have a bucket list? Should you have a bucket list? I don't know. I'm not really sure. I do I have a ride every year on my birthday, which is that I have to ride my age on my birthday in miles. So that's a fun little
that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a fun one. That one is definitely a fun one. So anyway, if you want to discuss that a little bit more, you can put it on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. And also on a positive side, okay, gotta say it. Fran and I had the opportunity to go to the bike show this weekend in Hartford, the National Hand-Built Bike Show, which was in Hartford. It was so cool. It was a great, great thing. Wonderful people. I actually heard from, and I'll probably have a separate podcast on this, but I heard from the director of the show that they broke record numbers. Wow. This weekend, especially on Friday. They were really surprised because Friday is not usually a day that they do really well with it. So they hit some big numbers on Friday. I think it's because it's the middle of the winter. It's Friday, and I think the bike shops all came out on Friday to kind of check it out. So I have a little bit of a thought about that. So anyway, if you have not seen anything from that, I have posted a Dropbox link on the Facebook page, and you can look at all the pretty bikes. There's some pretty bikes, really, really pretty bikes, and lots of other interesting things too. Plus, I made probably another 3 or 4, maybe 10 contacts there that want to be on the show. So we're going to have some interesting shows coming up in the future. The maintenance minute. Inspecting your old steel frame. Because, you know, the bike show is primarily steel bikes. So I thought, maybe I'll bring this up. You know, if you have a steel bike and you love your steel bike, I get it. I totally get it. I have two of them. So I totally understand why, you know, steel is a material that is near and dear to your heart. And, you know, I know there's lighter materials out there. I know there's, you know, more high-tech materials out there and all, but there's something about a steel bike. It's just a thing. So anyway, you should be always inspecting your steel frame because what can happen is you can actually get corrosion and rust in the inside of it. Hence the problem why some people don't like steel, because steel can eventually start to, you know, fall apart. Now, you can put a frame-saving material inside of your steel frame, which I think was originally developed by one of the builders who was at the show. It wasn't developed by him, but he promoted it, and he brought people's awareness to it, and that was Mr. Peter Weigel, J.P. Weigel, and he has something called J.P. Weigel Frame Saver, which is a really cool. It's kind of a spray. You spray into the inside of your tubes, and it keeps your tubes from rusting out from the inside out, which is kind of a cool thing. So you can do that. But you should inspect that bike every once in a while. Pull the seat post out. Take a look down inside. Put a light in there. Look around. Pull the bottom bracket apart. Get inside. Look around. Make sure there's nothing nasty going on in the inside of your favorite little bike. So check that out. If you ride an aluminum bike, you also want to kind of check things out. Look around, look for cracks, look for interesting things that might be developing. And then also on a carbon bike, same thing. All bikes will eventually hit a fatigue point, some sooner than others. So there is a shelf life. Most of the industry on carbon frames, they have no more than a 5-year warranty on their frames because they know that there's a shelf life and there's an expectancy that they will eventually break. Some manufacturers go for the full boat. They give you a lifetime, but that's getting far and it's not as common as it used to be. So check that out. Here's the other part of this. Listen for unusual noises. Your bicycle is not supposed to talk. You're supposed to talk. We're all communicating. That's good. Your bike's not supposed to talk. It's not supposed to cry. It's not supposed to weep. It's not supposed to squeak. It's not supposed to make any noises at all. It should be very, very quiet underneath you. If it's not, you need to look into it, find out why. If you're confused by this and you're one of those who's when in doubt, hire out, please visit your local bicycle shop and they can help you out with that. That's what they're there for. And they can probably find the source of your squeak, creak, or groan. So listen for unusual noises. So I'm going to move on from that, and we're going to go to our guest today. My guest today is Brian Phelps, and Brian Phelps wrote a book called Fanny and Me. And he is here to talk to us all about his book, what it's all about, who he is, and how this all works. So, Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank Why you, didn't Ron? You write it about Franny and me?
I know. It's Franny on the other side here. She always turns everything into Franny. It's very clever, though.
Oh, when possible, take a load off Franny.
Yeah, take a load off Franny.
Take a load for free.
There she is.
Well, Fran, this is interesting because in the making is a sequel. It's called Fanny and Me. Sorry, Fran, you're not going to fit into the sequel.
No!
But maybe she may be inserted somehow, Fran and Me, because I'm looking at a lot of possibilities that happen as a result of the trip, going beyond the trip to the present and to the future.
Yeah.
So,
okay,
Fanny and Me.
So there's a future here.
Fanny will be the name of the book.
That's wonderful.
There you go.
Find Fanny. Fanny was my grandmother, and I was named for her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So, Brian, you contacted me because you did something really cool. You rode your bicycle across the country. You did a 4,000-mile trip. Yeah. I've also done that.
Shake that hand.
It's a great trip.
Oh,
I know. Wow. Hey, yeah, we're a member of the club, right?
We are.
So you did a 4,000-mile trip across the country, but you did the thing that I should have done, didn't do, and you logged everything, and you wrote a book about it,
yes,
which is really cool.
Yes.
And so you've got a book here that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
But first, before we talk about that, I have to ask you what I ask every new guest on the show,
sure,
and that is I want you to relate to me your very first memory of being on a bicycle.
Yeah, it was my mom. She taught me how to ride. And it was a little path going down the side of our house, kind of flat, but then it went around a corner. Right at the corner, there was a slope, and she had the back of the seat kind of guiding me as I'm balancing. But when we got to the corner, it speeded up, and she almost lost control. And I almost went down that slope, which another 10 feet, I would have gone over the 5-foot stone wall.
That would not have been good.
And that would have been the end of my bicycling experience for a long time. And many, many, many years later, I remember one time asking Mom, "Hey, Mom, I never asked you if you knew how to ride a bicycle." And she said, "Oh, no, I never learned." I said, "We need to get you on a bicycle." And there was no way I could get her on a bicycle. I had it right there, and she's no way.
I never got my mom on a bike either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like it's a regret, but now that you mention it, I'm thinking, that would have been great.
Yeah, my mom fell once a few years ago, and she won't get back on.
Yeah, yeah.
That happens to a lot of people. They you know, they have that one bad experience, and then they go, no. But you know what? If you put them in a car and they had a bad experience, they'd still drive their car.
I fall off a bicycle, and I'm like, all right, when can I get back on? When can I get back on? Can I get back on?
Exactly.
It's an interesting makeup of that personality sometimes, especially the age.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, she was resistant. I said, okay, fine. My first tour was in 1983 when I came up to New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And that tour was with an old Raleigh
Supercourse.
And my friend and I rode from Connecticut, from Stafford, Connecticut, up to the White Mountains. And he wasn't really a cyclist at all. His brakes didn't work, and he had to use his sneakers to stop, drag him on the road. And so I learned about this touring thing back then.
Wow.
And I said, huh. And, you know, we get together every now and then, reminisce that first tour.
Sure.
And how crazy we were and how ancient the equipment was. But, that touring thing is really, I think, kind of like a walkabout.
Well, it's a wanderlust. You get to go out and you get to explore and you meet new people and you see new things.
Check this out, Ron. The fourth day on my trip, I woke up angry. I had no idea why I was angry. And so the rest of the morning I'm saying, wait a minute. And then Fanny told me why she thought I was angry.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it was, Brian, you're angry because you didn't do this trip 40 years ago.
Right. There
and
you go.
Said, oh, my God. And so she and I, you know, you were talking about, well, you know, your bike can't talk. Well, Fanny and I talk. Ron. My bike, I talk a lot. So hold that thought.
Yeah.
So for the rest of the morning, I'm thinking about 40 years ago, if I had cycled across the country, it would have been a whole completely different trip. It wouldn't have meant anything. All I would have been doing, and if you can flash back to when you did your trip.
I was 20 years old.
See?
Yeah.
And it had a major impact on you.
Huge.
Okay. For me, when I was 20, it would have had zero impact. All I would be doing is the miles. That's all.
Yeah, that's not what I was interested in.
You know,
I was very naive. I was very wet behind the ears, we'll call it.
All of us were.
And I was, you know, I had no idea what I was getting myself into.
Yeah.
All I knew is I had to do it.
Yeah, just do it.
Yeah. And that was it. So Brian, you call your bike Fanny.
Yeah.
Why?
Basically, I had found Fanny behind a tarp in my garage. And I've been thinking of doing something really big, like a trip across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this Fuji, 1982 Fuji S12S LTD.
Yeah, I remember the bike well. Yeah. I used to sell them.
We'll talk about that too. And so I cleaned 5 pounds of grunge off of her and brought it to a bike shop, and the manager said, oh, we used to sell thousands of these back in the
day. Oh, absolutely.
Excellent touring bike. Oh, my God, this is great. And I said, I'm thinking of taking this bike across the country. And he says, it needs some minor modifications, but this bike is in good shape. This will do it. And then he gave me a look, a kind of a sarcastic look that I'll never forget, like, but I don't know about you. And so he tried to sell me a new bike. You know, if your bike breaks down, you're going to have a hard time getting parts. And I said, no, thank you. This is a $50 yard sale bike.
Right.
Thank you very much. A nice guy. You know, I understood what he was doing. And
no
problem. I go out to the parking lot, and I'm ripped. I'm angry because, you know, he dissed me. He was a dream stealer. Mm. And I said, I don't believe he did that. And then I heard a voice say, he dissed me too. And I'm looking around. There's no one there. And I said, who said that? And then the next response was, you did. You're talking to yourself. I said, what? And I said, wait a minute. Maybe I'm talking to that deep, dark, cobwebby place in my mind, that alter ego. I said, this is scary, talking to my bicycle. And the other voice said, we need to show this guy some respect lessons. I said, yeah, yeah. And hey, I said, you know, you've got a different personality than me. I remember, Ron, I remember this. What are those? What are those?
What, goosebumps? Yeah.
I remember this like it was the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And all 86 days of this book, like it was the other day. And I said, you know, we should do this trip. Hey, you want to go on a bike trip?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we'll rub it in his face. Yeah. And so that's how Fanny got the voice. But then I remembered when I was checking out the internet about touring, I found that all touring cyclists had one thing in common,
mm-hmm.
a sore butt. And I said, Fanny, I'm going to call you Fanny. And she said, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Said, let's do this thing.
So you have a personal relationship with your bike.
Totally. Completely, yeah. Totally.
That's great. That's
and
great.
And you didn't finish it, so you don't know the ending.
Yeah.
And that is a tearjerker.
Yeah.
Major tearjerker.
Yeah. Oh, I have a funny feeling something may have happened.
I can't tell you.
I can't tell you.
I'll have to finish the book.
I'll have to do that. Yeah. I'll definitely have to do that. So anyway, yeah. So Fanny, that's good. You know, I don't know if I've ever, my sister's big on naming things like cars and bicycles and things, but I don't know that I've ever named my bike.
I named everything. When I retired, everything became like a personal attachment to me. So everything, all my cars and trucks that I bought or traded over the years,
yep.
would have names, and they'd have personalities. And well, let me ask this. Fran, how about you? Have you ever gone down? Are you listening?
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah. She's
I'm just
there.
Making fun. So have you ever gone down the road in your car and you have a steering wheel conversation?
Not with my steering wheel. Oh, a conversation with the steering wheel.
Yeah. You know, and you know, you're angry or you're excited about something and you're pounding your steering wheel and you're talking to it. You never had the classic steering wheel conversation.
Well, no, not with a steering wheel, but I do that, just not specifically with a steering wheel. You tell them.
Fran does that a lot. She's
with
about
a lot of
one
things.
Of the most animated people I know. So,
well, does she hit the mic, you know, like bang?
No, she's good about that, but she's, you know, she does have open conversations. I often give Fran a hard time because one of the things, I even told you this morning, one of the things that I love about you is the fact that you have these intimate conversations with the television set.
Oh, my God.
Which are, oh, God, you know, she's a naturopathic physician, so if a drug ad comes on,
yeah.
Fran kind of tirades about
it. Oh, yeah.
Or if they get it wrong on the medical show, which they often do.
Sure.
But it's also fun on the medical show to predict what the outcome is going to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But then, you know, the lawyers that I know get mad at the
law
shows. And the police people I know get mad at the police shows because they would never do that.
Well,
you know, but, yeah.
But
you do rant in the TV. So,
I relearned on the trip is that we can't please everybody all the time.
No.
And all of the stuff that I learned on the trip came to a realization that, I didn't learn this for the first time. I relearned it.
Yeah.
And sometimes our lives are so busy and fast that we forget all those things that our parents and our friends in the community taught us when we were kids. And we just kind of push all those things aside. And we relearn them at a different time in our lives. And it's almost like, wow, yeah, I remember that.
Well, the thing is, I'm a Sagittarius at whatever you believe about, you know, astrology.
Right.
I don't believe in objective reality. So you can't assume anything about anybody or anything at any time.
Right. Right. That's true. That's true.
So in terms of, you know, assuming a person's going to believe a certain thing or be a certain way or you can't rely on things. I mean, as much as I love Ron, God forbid he could die tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't count on anything. Life is ephemeral. Life is.
Well, let's see. On the trip, I had just set my camp up and all of a sudden a Harley Davidson comes in and. Here's Brian in his stereotype thinking, oh, man, beer cans, party, loud and everything.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, oh, boy. And
you don't know that.
Yeah, you got that wrong.
Well, I had to get my act together and say, wait a minute, I'm going to make this into a good, positive situation.
Right.
I went over. I was stepping so far out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
I went over to introduce myself, and we got to talking. It was tears.
Aww.
They were fantastic.
Aww.
It gets better. 2 days later, I'm riding my bicycle along, and this motorcycle passes me, and it stops right in front. And they get off, and I recognize them. They're Brian and Kim from Ontario. Hey, guys. And we're hugging and everything. They said, Brian, you're not going to believe this, but we almost died yesterday. I said,
whoa.
What?
Oh.
What?
I said,
yeah. We're riding along, and Brian was riding the motorcycle. Kim was in the back, and a bug hit him in the neck.
Oh.
A bug. But it wasn't just a bug. He almost lost the cycle, and she pulled him over so she could drive. They went to an emergency room. His whole head swelled up. And it wasn't an allergic reaction. It was what they called a burn bug.
Oh, it was a special kind of bug.
Special. And it had it caused a chemical reaction that was eating the skin instantaneously.
Wow.
And it was huge. He said, Brian, we were about that close to death.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, oh, my God. So there was a lot of tears, and we hugged.
Wow.
That thin thread, you know?
Yep.
The thin thread, you never know. Wow.
Yeah.
It was tears.
You know, the experiences that you have when you ride a bicycle and you're out there and it's you against the elements of the world, or not against, but with the elements of the world.
Yes.
And it's just, I can't explain it to people until they do it.
Yeah.
And then when they do it, they come back to me and go, you know what, you're right. I met some incredible people, and you know, it really renews your faith in the human spirit.
Absolutely.
It really does.
Did you have, not to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
I'm
go
on
ahead.
A rant.
That's okay.
Not
rant
a rant. But
anyway,
did you have random acts of kindness?
Many.
Did you have cycling angels?
Yes. I noticed that you had put on your description here you to ask about cycling angels.
Yep.
The people that I met, and I'm gonna really, really shout out to the flyover states on this one.
Yeah.
The people in the Midwest are, I've said this a number of times on this show, I'll say it again, they are from, I believe that they come from another planet.
I agree.
They're just not the norm. They're not the East or West Coast.
Yes.
And they're not, you know, I don't know what it is. It's because, you know, a lot of them are farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like an easy life. It's a hard life.
But
they're not as hard as the people on the East or the West.
Exactly.
And I have to say something about that. Mm. I think it's that way in the extreme northeast of Connecticut.
Well,
the loveliest people live in Killingly and Thompson and Putnam.
We do have some special people out here. Well, yeah.
Are they listening?
Maybe Stafford, too.
They're probably
some of them
listening.
Sure.
Hey,
probably
are you out there listening? Did you just hear that from Fran?
I love you people. I wish you more of you would come. Well, the ones who come see me in my practice, I love them. I just look forward to them. When I see that their address is Putnam or Danielson or Dayville or Thompson, I'm like, yes. Yeah. And the other thing is I have a wonderful – and I have to get this going – but I have a wonderful relationship with the Friends of Assisi Food Pantry. And every year I go and I speak there. And they do this wonderful thing. They treat me like all that. And
like the goddess you are.
They put out a basket, and everybody who comes. So they're all the people that volunteer at the Friends of Assisi Food Pantry. And everybody gets to put a question on a piece of paper, and they put it in a basket. And it's the easiest talk ever because I don't have to prepare. I show up there, and I just pull the questions out one at a time, and I answer them all. And it's great fun. Yeah,
that is.
And it's a cute little food pantry, too. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Shout out to Gene Sear. We got to get this together. We haven't scheduled it for this year. We got to do that.
All right.
That volunteering is a huge, huge issue that I love. I stumbled into it by accident. Well, stumble is an accident. Loved every second of it. And I didn't realize that by giving, you get back in return.
Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
It's very
good for your health to be altruistic.
Oh, God. Totally.
It is.
Complete.
It really is.
And so I get goosebumps every time I go to volunteer for the soup kitchen in Stafford, Flo's Kitchen, or the National Park Services, the Army Corps. I do a lot of volunteering.
Mm.
And before I retired, I didn't even know how to spell the word.
That's funny.
My life was too busy to understand.
So you say Stafford, and yet I read your you know, the prologue in your book and other parts of your book, and it says New Hampshire. So where are you from?
The even funnier question is, so where are you going to be from?
Okay.
Yeah, but that's another story. So originally I'm from Stafford Springs.
Okay.
Born and raised there. And then in 83, I moved up to New Hampshire and lived up there till last year.
Okay.
And then last year at Christmas time, my landlady of 7 years said, Brian, I'm sorry to have to say this, but the house is going into foreclosure. You have to move.
Oh, that's a shame. Where did you live in New Hampshire?
Well, I was in Concord.
Oh, uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, capital, community
right.
called...
Is that
yeah,
capital?
Capital.
Right.
It's in Bow, which is right next to Concord. And, you know, it was like, yeah, I'm really sorry to hear that. I hope everything turns out well for you. And but I'm going to be living down in Staffordville in my cousin's in-law apartment. And so I'm not skipping a beat. Sorry, honey. You know,
we love Staffordville and Stafford. It's a great place to ride your bike around. It's really quiet, nice rural air atmosphere. There's an awesome little cafe in downtown.
Yes, Middle Ground.
Yeah, the Middle Ground.
Middle Ground. Hey, did you hear that promotion?
We have a few little things that we do that slip out.
Well,
but
that's what I'm going to do in the upcoming months is promotion on my website of places like that, you know, that mean something to me, and maybe they mean something to someone else who comes onto the website or is traveling through a certain area. So,
You refer to yourself as a geezer.
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. Okay, let me ask this question. AARP, I'm a card-carrying member.
I, too.
Yeah, we all are.
Yeah, and the only reason I'm a card-carrying member, the only reason is I love their magazine.
Huh?
Yeah.
But everything else, all of those other bennies, I discovered don't apply to me.
No movie tickets?
Nope. Sorry.
We should get movie tickets.
Yeah.
Well, when I traveled across the country, I would flash my AARP card all the time, and they said, sorry, didn't apply. I wasn't on a cruise boat. Mm-hmm. I wasn't flying an airplane. I wasn't renting an Avis car or all of these other great things. Nothing applied except I lucked out and got a 15% discount at Denny's restaurant. Well, you're going to love this. Now, I have to clarify this because it was the worst meal I had of 86 days.
But
in defense of Denny's restaurant, I've gone back there just to check.
To make sure
it's just
still the same?
Yeah, well, that it had changed. And it had changed. They are excellent.
Okay.
Excellent now.
Good. That's good.
It's not like I'm trying to promote them, but just that there was a huge difference.
Yeah.
And that card didn't get me anything other than a 15% discount on.
Well, you know, it's not that well recognized in many unconventional traveling.
That is true.
Places.
Yeah.
So if you're, you know, if you're doing these conventional travel things, then I can see it.
It applies,
but,
and it's
but
beneficial.
Doing conventional travel is just not like riding a bike.
It's not.
You know, I mean, why would you do that when you can ride your bike? So
I tried it up in Canada. And they looked at me and said, and what do you want us to do with this?
Right, exactly. Exactly. Probably doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So anyway, geezer I thought was funny.
Oh, I'm sorry. The geezer thing. Yeah. So I kidded around and some people took offense to that. And I said, well, what I'm trying to do here since I've retired is change not only the definition but the attitude of not only the elderly but also the way people look at the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's not an age thing. It's an attitude thing.
Absolutely. I'm with you there.
And boy, I was going to do everything in my power to do stuff that would redefine a geezer.
Right.
And many, many times people would say, you're a geezer? You don't look like a geezer. And I said, I have good genes, the Dick Clark genes.
No, you know what it is? You ride a bike.
That's
what this show is all about.
It is.
It's all about you ride a bike, and riding your bike keeps you young. It totally does.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's why, you know, I'm constantly pushing and promoting the idea of riding your bicycle, because it's all about the bike.
It is.
It really is. That's why we're Bicycle Talk. That's what we do here.
Yeah.
You know, it is really all about the bike.
Yeah.
And it makes a huge difference. We went to, I should be careful about this one. We went to my 40th year class reunion for high school.
Ah.
And Fran looked around and went, So who are all these old people? And they're my people.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, to be fair, there were a number of them that are in really good shape, and they look great.
Sure.
And I actually we both put together a nice organized bike ride for anybody who was coming in from out of town. They wanted to go on ride.
Nice.
We
yeah.
got the local bike shop to rent us bikes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and so we took people out for a ride, and that was kind of fun.
That's good.
You know, because I had to put my little spin on there.
Sure.
But the people always look at me and go, but you don't look like you're, you know, or you don't act like you're. And I have an answer for that.
And
you're welcome to use this. I go, absolutely, yes, I do. It's just all the others that have it wrong.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I like that.
See? So that's the deal.
That's the deal.
It's all about how you present yourself.
Yeah.
And you know, that positive mind and attitude comes from the fact that you sit on a bicycle a lot.
During the trip, I stumbled onto a lot of ideas that I wanted to try out. And early in the trip, I wanted to leave people feeling better about themselves as compared to when they first met me.
Hmm. Okay.
And it was like not a game, but it was a challenge. I mean, here I am literally cold connecting with somebody that I don't know. They don't know me.
Right.
And so my challenge was to leave them feeling better about not only themselves, but the whole experience with this crazy guy on a bicycle.
So Brian, you talk about cycling angels. You know, and the people that you meet, and you're the angel.
Yes.
So you're out there, and you're delivering. You're delivering the angelic presentation of you know, positive, and feel nicer after you've met me than before you met me.
Absolutely.
That's where that goes.
It's good stuff.
It is good stuff.
It keeps you young.
It does, and you're getting, and like you said, as you're giving, you're getting so much more in return. So it's a good thing.
And when I ran across my first one, I remember saying to myself, yeah, I read about these people. Now I just met one. And I said, this is great. And so one of my long-term goals after the trip was anytime I saw a touring cyclist, and if it was possible, I'd go up to him, give him some money, or give him some help in some capacity.
Where are you staying tonight? You want to put your tent up in the yard, or do you want to come in and get a hot shower or whatever? Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. You know, I have not had that many opportunities to do that, and I'm really kind of bummed about it because I was expecting that, you know, I was going to be able to do the
same thing. I'm ready
to give this back. And you know, I just haven't had as many opportunities as were given to me. It was amazing how many people took us in. I was with one other person, and we were welcomed with open arms. And I'm telling you, it happened when we crossed the magical Mississippi River.
Hmm.
When you got on the other side of that river, the world changed.
Wow.
We went east to west. You went west to east.
Yeah.
And you started where?
I started in Anacortes.
That's Washington. Smart. Yeah, Anacortes.
Well, that's
in the San Juan Islands. Yes.
Yeah. And that's what they all say, go from west to east.
Yeah.
Right. That's the right way to go, because I can tell you east to west stories that are not so pleasant.
So pleasant. But then when you get to North Dakota, all of the blogs will say, you will die with the headwinds.
And they
will beat your face. They will pull
you. Even though you're going west to east?
Yes.
Huh.
Really?
Yeah. Something about North Dakota and the Canadian winds coming down during the summertime. And I'd be riding along, and I'd feel my sleeve, if I had a long sleeve shirt on, getting yanked way over, almost pulling me off the road.
Wow.
And I'd look, and there's no one yanking on me. It's the wind.
You know, I had a guest on who last year who rode his bicycle around the perimeter of the United States.
Oh, wow.
And he, so Mike told me about that, too. It was it was North Dakota. He said it was really, really difficult.
Yeah.
That's funny that you bring that up.
And I'd talk to the wind. And sometimes I'd say, is that the best you can do? Come on, give me a best shot.
Oh, you are good for
constantly,
punishment.
I was constantly talking, constantly challenging myself.
Yeah.
And loving it.
Yeah.
And well, even if it was bad.
Whatever motivation you can get to get you through. Now, exactly. You did this entirely by yourself, right?
Yes.
Well, you and your bike.
Almost.
I know you have a relationship there. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Right.
But the two people that I met online way back in the winter said, we're going on the same route, Brian. We're retiring. Well, let's go together.
And there you go.
Oh, it gets better. Because... Okay. We all met in Anacortes at a restaurant.
Yeah.
There's the old part of Anacortes, which is beautiful, a lot of history, great restaurant. And we're all celebrating, and we're all excited, and it was almost surreal, this retirement thing starting July 1st, all three of us.
Yeah.
So we're riding back into Anacortes the next morning after we had dipped our tires.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
You
got to do the traditional
do
dip.
It, yeah.
Yeah. You got to do
and
it.
And we're all riding into Anacortes, and I say, hey, guys, I'll stop at the post office. I'll catch up to you.
Yeah.
Never saw them again.
Really?
Never heard from them again.
Oh, boy.
The cell service didn't work in the mountains.
Huh.
And a couple years later, I found their telephone number.
Yeah.
And called them up, and I say, hey, guys, what happened to you? Well, Brian, such and such had a major bicycle accident. That was the end of him. And such got really, really sick. And that was the end of him.
Really?
And that's when I remembered the 10% statistic. Which is all of the cyclists who go solo across the country, only 10% make it. And
wow.
The first day, I never could catch up to them. Fanny was telling me, Brian, you're crazy. These guys told us during dinner that they're doing 75 to 100 miles a day. Brian, we've never done in our training more than 50.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, don't worry, we'll catch up. We
mm-hmm.
never did. And it was the people all along the way that first week that refocused me on doing the trip. Just do it. Brian, come on, just do it. Fanny saying, you've put so much time and effort into this thing. All your projects are shot. All your plans are shot. So what are you going to do, Brian? And I said, okay, I'm going to do something different. And she said, you've got to remember, this is me talking to me. That deep, dark, cobwebby place that we all have in our heads.
Oh, yes, we do. Yep,
yeah, we
sure do.
And I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do, Fanny. I've never done this before. We're going to just wing it.
Right.
We're going to just go day by day and just wing it. Whatever happens, happens.
Right.
And she said, are you serious? This was very, very goosebumps. Very un-Brian-like. Brian always used to plan things out, all the details, forget the variables, all the details, plan everything out. And no variables. It was all details, you know. And so that first day... And the second day got even worse, was scary. But it was also empowering. And I had little victories all the time. And those little victories kind of moved me forward and mm-hmm. gave me goosebumps. And the book was supposed to be called Wow and Beyond. I figured, nah, that's too common.
Yeah. Well, what you did is you had an adventure. Okay.
Oh,
and you know what an adventure is? An adventure is what happens when things don't go exactly the way you had planned.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what life is.
That's
what life is all about.
Exactly. So, you know, you had a great experience.
Total.
That's really cool. You mentioned I read the very beginning of your book. I went through the prologue, and I'll tell you what, your prologue scared me half to death. I mean, it was really a frightening prologue. And, you know, obviously you're here to talk about it, so you came out of it okay. But that was a scary thing that
white
you
knuckles.
First started with. Yeah.
That was white knuckles. And I used that white knuckle analogy throughout the whole trip.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I got white knuckles, I said, oh, boy, I remember this. And Fanny, at some point, said, you know, Brian, I think you're like a cat. You have 9 lives. Well, not anymore. I think you're down at number 5 now. And, you know, there was a bunch of incidents that had happened that knocked those lives down.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd have debates over mm-hmm. how many lives I had left. And or, what are you doing to protect your one brain cell? And Fanny was concerned about me and was constantly challenging me.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure you can do this, Brian? Are you sure you want to do this?
Right.
And I'd step back and say, okay, so that's Fanny talking, but I'm hearing her challenge me. What the heck's going on here? Huh. So I don't know where I was going with that. But,
well, it's okay. No, you're fine. You're fine. So Route 6, you and Fanny, Route 6, Chapter 6, I'm thinking of the road out here. Chapter 6, you and Fanny had a bad crash. Now, you're still all by yourself at that point, right?
Yeah.
So what? Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah. Idaho,
mm-hmm.
Wallace, Idaho, Dobson Pass.
Mm-hmm.
To back up in the spring when I was doing all the training in New Hampshire, I remember riding off the road, hit a rock and went flying off the road and went down into a ravine and hit everything on the way down. And I woke up and my shoulder was broken and some teeth were knocked out. And
oh boy.
My eye was all bloody and it was late in the beyond dusk. It was getting dark and it was cold and it started sleeting. And the bike wasn't anywhere around, and I couldn't move, and the bike and the bags weren't anywhere around. I'm saying, oh, my God, I'm going to die here.
Mm.
And then I heard a rustling in the bushes, and I thought, oh, geez, what is this? And it was coming toward me.
It's the coyote getting ready to
And I'm thinking, oh, this is not good. And I heard this sound, and I said, what's that sound? And I heard it again, and it was an alarm. And I said, what's an alarm? Heard it again. It's an alarm clock. Had to wake up, go to work. It was a nightmare.
Oh.
The next day, I was in Dobson Pass. I had all the panniers and stuff off of Fanny, and I'm flying down the road, and Fanny says, bad guy, watch it. Too fast. Hit the rock. I went flying 40 feet in the air, just skidded down the road, and missed going off the edge. Down into a ravine, and no one would have found me.
Wow.
Just missed the edge. And it was, you know, if you're a cyclist, stuff like that is going to happen.
Yeah.
If it hasn't already. And all of these serendipity things that absolutely amazing, not luck, but things came into my life. I yanked myself and Fanny over to the side, and I'm bleeding all over, and unfortunately, I had my helmet on, but first car that comes by, the rubber neck looked and just kept going. The second car stopped, rolled the window down, and by then I'm hunched over the bike over on the side. They said, are you okay? And I said, nah, I'm hurting. Lady gets out with a black bag, and I said, are you a doctor? She said, no, a nurse.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Oh
How
my
about
God.
That?
And she started bandaging me up and fixing me. The Here. Husband gets out, throws Fanny into the back, bring us back down to the campground where I was staying.
Yeah.
It got even better. The manager of the campground said, hey, Brian, how? Oh, geez, Brian, oh, man, you're all messed up. Let me get Don. I said, why? Don used to be a bike mechanic. He'll fix this in no time. I said, are you kidding? This is Sunday night. Don't worry. Don comes out, looks at it, says, let me go home and get my tools. I'll fix this in no time. 3 hours later, with a light,
yep.
He fixed the whole bike. And I went to bed that night in a little cabin that they gave me for the price of a campsite. And I had that dream back in the spring of going over the edge. And I cried myself to sleep. It was like, oh, my God, you know, I was being pushed along on this trip, and I was being protected for a bigger purpose. It's like, wow, this was intense.
Yeah.
All the way for 86 days.
Yeah.
You know, and I tear up just like that.
Yeah.
I never used to tear up. Never. It was, hey, you know, buck up, man. You're a man. You're not supposed to tear up.
No.
That's okay. You're making up for lost time.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
I like that, Fran. You're absolutely right. I never thought of it like that. You're right, though.
Yeah.
Wow.
One of the worst things you can do is have emotions and not experience them. I have so many people come into my office and they're like, I'm anxious. I'm depressed. Give me something for it. They don't have time to feel the feelings. And I'm like, one good way to deal with anxiety and depression is to go into it and experience it and figure out why it's happening and just feel it.
Yeah.
If you're anxious or depressed, there's a reason and it's okay.
Yeah.
Mm.
And don't like cause more distress by looking at it and going, this isn't okay.
Right.
And you're given a great gift. What did you do? I don't know if we asked this yet.
Mm,
what did
ahead.
You do before? Are you retired now? What are you retired from?
Well, I worked for the state of New Hampshire for 25 years.
Oh!
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Loved it.
What did you do for the state?
Fannie says, this is one of the toughest jobs in America. I was a occupational safety and health consultant. Nobody's ever heard of OSHA.
OSHA, yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
We were the, the 21D program? I haven't used that word in a while. We were the free consultants. No one had ever seen us. No one had ever heard of us. We were the best kept secret. So the OSHA guys, are you listening, OSHA, wore the black hats and would find you and cite you. We wore the white hats and come in and said, we'll work with you.
Nice.
And I loved it. And then on Valentine's Day in 2011, we felt the love because they laid off 1,000 of us. So, but that was a good thing because then the retirement service said, Brian, you need to retire.
You got an early handshake.
Get a good early handshake.
Nice.
But the legislature is going to cut your pension this summer.
Aww.
Get out now.
Right. Right. My cousin worked for the state of Connecticut, did it for the exact same reason.
Really?
He retired early because he was going to lose some of his pension because of it. Yeah.
Right.
And it was, I had planned on working until I was 95 years old. And the running joke was, Brian, you and your boss are going to be closing the door, locking the door up to the building before the wrecking ball comes in. And I said, we love our jobs. We've been together for like 25 years.
Yeah.
But we check this out. Retirement is on that sheet also.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to leave this with you.
Oh, that's okay. That's good.
Anyway, so while I'm traveling across the country on Fannie, I called up the office when I had reception. And I said, hey, have you heard from Steve? He was our manager. And they said, yeah, Brian, we just heard from him a little while ago. Steve had retired and with a bunch of friends, got into an RV and toured the Southwest. That was how he started his retirement. Brian, on the other hand, was up in Anacortes, hopped on Fannie, and started his retirement traveling across the country. So, hey, how was Steve? How is he doing? Brian, you're not going to believe it. We've been together for 25 years. We have never heard him smile on the telephone.
No!
He was laughing and smiling.
We said, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Totally changed. All the weight and responsibilities of life were off his shoulders.
Yeah.
A different person. And I said, I can relate to that. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. That retirement concept is understated.
Well, we hope to do that someday. But, it's not on our immediate list.
We're working on it.
We're working on it for sure. Yeah. So you had a number of fascinating things in the book as I was, flipping through and checking different things out. And you also sent me a few things. So I'm going to cover a couple more here because we're going to run out of time.
We are.
So one of the other things I wanted to talk about because I noticed that you wrote on an interstate.
Yeah, I never knew what was legal and not.
Well, it is in some places in the country.
It is.
Because I did the same thing when I wrote. I wrote across 80 through Nevada.
Oh.
Yeah, I went across the Great Salt Lake Desert on the interstate because it was the safest place to do it
because
it was the only place that had a water stop.
Yeah.
So, when you're in the middle of the desert. But anyway, isn't that a little like I was completely freaked out the whole time that you know someone was going to come along and they were going to throw me in the back of a squad car and take me off to jail, and yet they don't. They don't do it.
They don't do it.
Yeah, they just kind of let you do it.
I was on Interstate 90 in the panhandle of Idaho, and it was the fastest way to get across the panhandle. So I got off of 2, got onto 90, and then discovered, I even asked a guy at the fence line. I said, can I ride on 90? He says, I don't know. I said, okay, fine. I got on it. And so here's NASCAR in front of me. All the tractor trailers, all the cars, and I'm saying, oh boy. But to back up, Brian had already had a kidney stone accident.
Oh.
Whoops.
Owie.
And he, that's part of the book.
Yeah. And yeah, I think I saw that.
I was loaded up with meds.
Oh. And
my goodness.
I knew I had a history of kidney stone attacks. I knew how to deal with it. Everybody, including the doctor, said, this is of the size that if it gets hung up, you're dead meat.
Aww. Mm.
And I said, I have a bicycle trip to complete. I've got places to go, people see, and things that are, excuse me. And I went flying out. I get onto 90, Interstate 90.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all drugged up. And I'll never forget this. They were going by so fast. It was loud and fast. And there was all this debris, you know, on breakdown lanes, all the debris, parts of vehicles. And I'm looking at this, and I'm saying, gee, I wonder what that part came from, that vehicle came from. And I was really gone. And I was flying down, weaving in and out. And I told Fanny, I said, Fanny, we're going to do something from the 70s. And she said, what's that? We're going to do video games. Minesweepers and...
Been there, done that.
And Space Invaders and all this. And she said, well, what's that? And I said, just watch. And so we're, you know, weaving in and out of all this stuff.
Sure.
Yep. And so I'm telling her about my experience with all these video games. And she said, were you any good? And I said, oh, absolutely not. And she said, wait a minute, what's wrong with this picture? You're on major medications, and you're weaving in and out of here. And I said, yeah, I didn't have any eye-hand coordination. She said, wouldn't it be a good idea to get off the highway with this bad eye-hand coordination thing going on? I said, yeah, maybe you're right. And so the next exit I pulled off, Interstate 90 or the highways, and bikes are a no-no, definitely. I mean,
yeah,
you know, sometimes we do stupid things, and we shouldn't. We know better.
Yeah,
and
well.
We're pressing our margins.
And sometimes you have to do what you have to do.
Yeah, that's the...
You know, that's it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, the book has got a lot of this in here. Brian's got just obviously there's a bundle of information here and lots of stories.
86
which is
days.
Great, which is great. 86 days on your bike, riding across the country. The book is called Fanny and Me, and you can find this book. How would I get this book? Do you have a website?
The website is called www.fannyandme.com. Mm-hmm.
Very good. So you can get to the book right by doing that, which is very nice. And so if you want to learn a little bit more about some of Brian's adventures, including crossing the Bong Bridge in Duluth, interesting. I'm sure there's some good story there. Words of insight and encouragement real quick before we leave you and I get to some final words here.
Yeah.
What would you say to someone who says, you know what, I heard that show and I think I want to do this? What's your word?
Absolutely. Don't hesitate. Just do it. That was what I've been promoting all along. Put it on your bucket list. Just do it. Period. If you have any questions, call Ron and Fran and me.
Very good.
I want to thank you. Before you close, I want to thank you both for inviting me here. I had a great time.
You can come back. I think we've only covered it. We've only dusted over a couple of chapters here. I think there's more. So we'll bring you back on again in a little while.
You've got a good show going.
And we'll give it a shot, okay? Yeah. So my guest today has been Brian Phelps, and he is from Stafford, Connecticut. Stafford Springs, Connecticut, now. And he rode his bicycle across the country in 86 days. Is that what you said?
86
days across the country. But he didn't want to just leave it with that. He wrote a book about it. And it's a fascinating book, lots of stories. Talks about a lot of little eateries along the way. I noticed that too. So there's a lot of fun stuff in there that I think you'll all really enjoy. So check it out, Fanny and Me, the book. We're going to close off the show today with a few announcements. And we now that we've been beyond the North American Handbuilt Show, we still have the National Bike Summit in Washington, D.C. That will be March 5th through the 7th. And you can find out more about that at bikeleague.org/summit. And that is a summit that is in Washington, D.C., and it's a premier bicycle advocacy event of the year, uniting voices of bicyclists on Capitol Hill. So it's a great thing to go to. If you are going to go to it, contact your state senators before you go and let them know that you're going there and let them know that you're interested in talking to them about bicycles or that you're going to learn more about bicycles and you want to have future conversations with them. Very important. We have another thing, April 26th through the 27th in Boston, Massachusetts. There will be the New England Bike Walk Summit. And you can find that also online if you just do a little Google search on that. I don't have the actual website up here in front of me. But the New England Bike Walk Summit, April 26th through the 27th in Boston. Shout out to my friend Richard Fries. And on Friday, April 6th, actually, I got this out of line here, 2018, from 8:30 to 5 p.m., the bikewalkct.org summit. So bikewalkct.org is the website, and there is a bike summit, and it is at the Lyceum in Hartford, Connecticut on Lawrence Street. So you want to check that out, too. My name is Pedlin Ron, and you've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, and you can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to contribute to the show or be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedlin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.